Let's return to This Week in America. Here's your host, Rick Bratton.
Welcome back, everybody. Coast to Coast, This Week in America. A Remembrance of Things Forgotten by Steve Shinani describes his journey from being a high-powered lawyer to going to seminary and then being an interfaith hospital chaplain intern, seeing cancer patients on two oncology units at a major New York medical center. After 37 years as a practicing attorney, Stephen stepped down as a partner at his law firm to go to Union Theological Seminary in New York City to pursue a Master of Divinity degree. While at Union, he was accepted as part of his seminary training into a part-time chaplaincy intern program at a major New York City hospital. His time as a hospital chaplain took his spirituality and faith out of the realm of theory and into a lived reality of quietly accompanying cancer patients and embracing the presence of divine love shining in each hospital room and in the heart of each patient. Remembrance of Things Forgotten, author Stephen Shinani, our guest on This Week in America. Stephen, welcome to the program. A pleasure to have you with us.
Oh, Rick, it's a pleasure to be here. Thank you so much.
What a journey you've been on, and you express it so well in the book, and it gets all of us thinking and maybe taking a different direction in life after seeing what you've went through, how you've been able to touch people. Describe the journey from being a lawyer to then attending seminary to working in the hospital as a hospital chaplain. What was that whole experience like for you?
Oh, my goodness. Well, I've always been very interested in world religions. Back to when I was actually in middle school and high school, I studied all sorts of world religions on my own, was always inspired by them, became a lawyer, you know, professionally, had a love of the law and sort of the core values of the rule of law in terms of respecting human dignity. But after all those years, I was sitting at the dining room table with my wife, and I said to her, you know, I feel like something's missing. So she said, well, Stephen, you've been so involved on your own studying religion and philosophy and all those good things. Why don't you go get a PhD in religion, religious studies? And I looked at her and it just came over me. I said, no, I'm going to go to seminary. I'm going to go to divinity school. So I did. I went to Union Theological Seminary. And as part of my training at the seminary, I did the internship, as you indicated, as an interfaith hospital chaplain at this medical center in a program with a chaplaincy supervisor, Jose Maria, who was just absolutely wonderful. And that's how I got from being a lawyer to seminary and then to being a chaplain. And being a chaplain sort of transformed my life in so many ways. It was an inspiring and amazing time.
And then being an author, this book, Remembrance of Things Forgotten by Stephen Shinani, that's Shananie. I'll spell that a couple of times if you're Googling. We've got up on our website the link to his website, which has his name in it. So if you want to not worry about spelling or misspelling the last name, just go to our website and click on the link. It'll take you there. Information on the book and to order that there as well. Talk about how you chose the units that you were in the hospital. How did that happen?
You know, it was interesting. I actually did not choose them. I got to the program and they said, you're going to be on two oncology units, the oncology hematology unit and the bone marrow unit. So there was only patients with either leukemia diagnoses or lymphoma diagnoses, very, very sick patients. And I got to tell you, Rick, it was a blessing in so many ways, because many times when you're a chaplain in a hospital, you'll see a patient once, you know, they're in for an operation, you might stop by, they might ask for a chaplain, and you talk to them, they have the operation, and then they're discharged. Regrettably, but also for me, it was a blessing, the patients I saw were very sick cancer patients, and many of them were at the hospital for weeks, or maybe even months, a few of them. So I ended up developing very close relationships with a number of patients. In each chapter of my book, I pick one patient to talk about my relationship with that patient and really what I learned and how I was inspired by the patients, you know, as they struggled with their cancer diagnoses and as I developed a relationship with them and we explored, you know, their faith, their spirituality, and the connection and love that we developed between us.
you know, it's interesting. You're there to help them, and it sounds like they were in turn helping you. Talk about that. What did you learn? What was it like the first couple of patients you talked to? This is a whole new world for you. What was it like going in and talking and listening and helping these people get through some rather traumatic situations?
Yes. It's a good question. It's funny because I've been a lawyer for so many years, and as a lawyer, I'm trained to be someone who fixes your problem, right? A client comes in, says, I have this problem. And I'm like, great, I have the expertise. I'm going to try to fix your problem. So my supervisor said to me, Jose Maria, chaplaincy supervisor, said, Stephen, take your lawyer hat off. You're not there to fix the patients. You're there to be a presence. It's called a ministry of presence. And you're there to have a listening heart and to help the patient find their own internal spiritual or emotional resources and inner strength that they may be forgetting. So when I started going into the patient's rooms, being trained, you know, in this manner, I would be very nervous because, you know, I was self-involved. I'm like, oh, I don't want to do harm. Am I going to be okay? Will I actually be a successful chaplain? Self-involvement, if you will, nervousness, you know, first time yes. I've done this. But what happened was there was one story, Maria, who I mean, it was actually one of the first stories I set forth in the book, not her real name, by the way, Rick, you know, I have to change the name, some of the details to protect the privacy of the patients. But I walk into Maria's room, very nervous. I start introducing myself as a chaplain, and I see that she's sitting up in bed and very depressed. And all of a sudden, I forget about myself. And I just say, Maria, what's wrong? And she looks at me and she goes, God's punishing me. And my heart goes out to her. And I said, why do you think God's punishing you? And she says, I haven't been grateful enough. And I got to tell you, at that point, seeing her suffering without judgment, without looking to fix her, without trying to have an answer for her, suddenly I saw the divine light, the light of God's love shining in the room and shining in her heart. And I couldn't stop myself. I just said, oh, Maria, you know, can you feel the light of God's love shining in your heart right now? I can see it. And she put her hand on her chest. And suddenly she looked up at me and smiled and said, and I said, Stephen, I can feel it.
What a magical moment.
That moment on, it was a magic transformed me. And what happens is it's strange because it was such suffering and she was struggling. And I, you know, went into her room, saw her for the next, must have been the next 4 weeks. And ultimately she was discharged from the hospital. We developed a very close relationship, and I could see she got happier and happier despite fighting with her leukemia diagnosis and going through chemotherapy and other very intrusive procedures. And it became a spiritual journey that she was on, but I went on with her. It wasn't me teaching her. It wasn't me proselytizing to her on one religion or another. It was rather finding the reality, the concrete reality of a presence of divine love in that room that we both felt, not an abstract belief, not a, you know, conceptual formulation in our minds, but real. And then as we exchanged compassion and love back and forth, it was just a wondrous experience.
What was it like for you? You're dealing with patients. Many of them will not make it. You leave the room. It has to be emotionally very difficult. And what you just mentioned, you sort of balance that when you walk out of a room and you've made a person feel better about themselves, feel better about their situation. How drained at the end of the day were you with emotions on both on both sides? I can see you saying, okay, I've got to sit down here for a couple of hours and just disappear here and absorb what just happened in my day today. What was that like, the highs and the lows?
Oh, my goodness, yes. I mean, what would happen would be I'd go up onto the units up on the 10th floor where the oncology units were, and I'd be there for a couple of hours. And then I'd have to go back down to the chaplaincy, the spiritual care office, and actually take notes in the medical record as to my visit. And then I'm supposed to go back up to the floor. And sometimes, exactly what you're saying, Rick, I'd sit there and I'd take a deep breath and say, I got to pull my energy together, before I go back up, because it is both draining and exhilarating. And it's funny, the pain that I saw in these people and the suffering they were going through, you know, you would think that's what would be the most draining, but it wasn't. Because when your heart breaks for them and your heart opens to another human being, all of a sudden your heart expands in size and has room for a love that maybe you didn't have previously to flow through you. And that love is healing not only for the patient, but for you yourself. But what happens is it is exhausting being a chaplain, because before you go into a room, you know, and I actually go back up to the floor, I have to take a deep breath and say, Stephen, take all of my concerns about myself, about my family, about, you know, whatever we all have on a daily basis, put it aside, because I have to put all my energy when I go into that room with an open heart, a listening heart, a quiet mind, and focus on that patient and know that, let them know that I'm there for them totally. That process is, as I said, both exhilarating, but it's also, when you do that for several hours and then take a break and do it for more hours, that's what's ultimately is exhausting for me. And then you go home. Now my chaplaincy supervisor, you know, to the whole cohort, and I was there with a number of other interns of various religious persuasions. He said to us very carefully, and he would help us with self-care, as he said, you know, because of exactly what you're saying, Rick, the emotional ups and downs that you have with the patients. And some of them would pass, and that would be, you know, tremendous grief, especially after you developed a relationship with them. But I'll tell you one other story. There was one patient I went in who was really not doing well, and it looked like she was not going to make it. And she said to me, and I was just amazed, she said, well, Stephen, I'm in a win-win situation. And I was like, what? I said it a little nicer than that. And
yes.
Said, how are you in a win-win? She said, well, in the past year, my husband passed, my parents passed, and she was a Christian and believed in heaven. And she said, if I pass, I'm going to actually be reunited with them. And I said, but if I beat this, I will be with my family who are still here. So either way, I'm going to be with loved ones. And you know, I did not comment or whatever else. And I just was amazed by her strength and her vision and, you know, her spiritual strength and energy and light that she had.
You mentioned that divine love, and that's something that comes across when you read Stephen's book, Remembrance of Things Forgotten. Had you ever felt that emotion before? You're a, I would say, high-powered attorney, but a very successful attorney. You've worked in a number of areas, organized crime, in the law firm that you're still with, as I understand, but you basically left for a while. You transitioned so you could go to the theological school. Had you ever felt anything like that before, or did this... Did you discover something about Stephen, part of your soul you didn't know existed?
Do you know, the answer is yes and no, it's both. I had experienced it before and then sort of forgot it or yearned to get back to it and thought I had to have some mystical, you know, experience, because I did have some mystical experiences that where I was touched by divine love. And I thought, oh, I have to go back to those mystical experiences. And how do I do that? What I learned as a chaplain was you don't need a mystical experience to experience that divine love, to be touched by it. That each one of us, all we have to do is open our eyes a little bit and look and see the concrete reality of other people and of life around us. And I found out that when you do that, yeah, you'll see the suffering, you'll see the darkness, you'll see, you know, things that are not that good, but you also see at the same time the light that is there. And, you know, when I was back, and I describe it in the book, I did have a number of mystical experiences. I had one dream when I was in college, you know, years and years before, that was transformative, and I continually yearned to get back to it. And in this dream, God's love passed through my heart and out to two children who were crippled, and they were healed, and it was nothing I did. And when that divine love flowed through me in that dream, I was transformed. It was beyond anything I could comprehend. And the touch on my heart was the echo of a reverberation, you know, of a reflection. You know, it was so far beyond my comprehension, yet I didn't feel diminished by it. I felt inspired. And for the next 3 days, while I was walking around the classes, I just saw divine love shining everywhere. And then it faded. And then I got my degree and I went to law school and I became a lawyer. And then I went to seminary and was studying theology, yearning for that sense of the actual presence. Many people who have faith feel it on a daily basis. And, you know, it was a little abstract to me, even though I had had that experience. And then suddenly walking into those rooms, putting aside any desire to know the truth, possess the truth, talk about the truth, but just to be present, suddenly the divine love was back, and it was there in the heart of the patients and in my own heart, and even in just the air of the room.
It's such a remarkable story, Remembrance of Things Forgotten by Stephen Chanani. And if you're trying to spell that, it's C-H-A-N-A-N-I-E. His website is stephenchanani.ampbk, to give you more confusion there, .com. I tell you what, it's on our website. Go to our website, and you'll be able to link on directly to Stephen's website, or just Google the name of the book, A Remembrance of Things Forgotten. The book's available at Amazon, Barnes & Noble, all the usual places. What exactly does a hospital chaplain do? We hear that we're in the hospital. They say the hospital chaplain's going to be coming by. What do you do? What is the main function of a hospital chaplain?
Right. It's actually changed. If you look at the history, it used to be a lot of white male Protestant Christian ministers or Catholic priests. You know, that was sort of the traditional, and they would sort of come in and there'd be a little bit of proselytizing there and, you know, gee, have you, you know, found God? It has changed. And today, I think nationally, it's fair to say, based on what I saw at my hospital and, you know, other fellow seminarians of mine who did chaplaincy around the country, it's become a ministry of presence is what they call it. We are coming in to be a loving presence with the patient, to hold their hand and help them, as I said earlier, find their own spirituality. So I would go in and, yes, I, you know, would minister to Christians, but also to Jews, Hindus, Buddhists, you know, so many different religious persuasions. And each one was fine, and I would relate to them on that basis. And, you know, some of them, like, for instance, there was one patient I had, she was actually a Hindu, and beautiful woman, older woman, struggling again with her cancer. And she said to me, you know, Stephen, you know, I have such support from my family, but I got to tell you, when they come in, they're so upset that I may be dying that I have to sort of care for them. And of course I'm going to do that because I love them so much and they love me, but it's a burden. So when I came in, she didn't have to care for me.
Interesting.
And nor did she have to negotiate with me the way she might with a physician or a doctor. Should she go under the aggressive chemotherapy or not? And let's talk about the treatment. And the doctors were wonderful there at the hospital, I must say. But she said, you know, each time she had to deal with either the emotions of her loved ones or the medical, you know, intricacies and demands of the doctors and the medical staff. But when I came in, she could just relax. And she said that to me. And she said, you know, you're a blessing, Stephen. And we would talk about her Hindu spirituality. And we would talk about the emotional issues she was having. Now, interesting thing about her, just to show you what chaplains do, she was being faced with a very difficult proposition. Basically, her prognosis was not good. And the doctors were recommending a very aggressive chemotherapy that would be debilitating to her and was not going to necessarily assure her recovery, but it gave her a chance. So her choice was let it go and just die. I hate to say it, but pass away.
Yes.
Or go through the aggressive chemotherapy, which would be honestly be very uncomfortable. And she was struggling with that. And her family was pushing her to do the aggressive chemotherapy, as were her doctors. So she said to me, Stephen, what should I do? And I said, I'm your chaplain and now your friend. I'm not here to tell you what to do, but let's talk about it. let's find what you want to do, what you think is best based on, you know, the input you're getting, based on your own emotional resources and your own spiritual resources. So I had to take off that urge I had as a lawyer to say, let's analyze the options. Let's go through.
Yes.
Put that aside and say, I'm just here to accompany you on your journey. And that's part of what a chaplain does, accompany the patients. If they want it, some patients I would go in and say, hi, I'm Stephen, you know, with the spiritual care department. I'm an interfaith chaplain, you know, and they'd say, thank you. Goodbye. You know, you'd say, okay, you wouldn't push it. And others would say, oh, wonderful. Sit down. I want to talk to you.
Amazing stories, all in Stephen's book, Remembrance of Things Forgotten. The book's available wherever books are sold. Stephen's website is, you can link into it by going to our website, thisweekinamerica.us. You've got an entire chapter there on prayer. Do you think the prayers were effective, are effective, and did you use prayer often?
I used prayer all the time. Many of the patients wanted me to pray for them with them. In the room, many patients said, can you pray for me when you leave? And can you pray for my wife or my husband, you know, who may be ill too, or is worrying about me, or my children? And I found my prayer list expanded. And I would tell them, honestly, yes, I'm praying for you. I'm praying for your family. I'm praying for the doctors who are taking care of you. And the patients would say, oh, you know, Stephen, we appreciate that so much. Were the prayers effective? You know, did they lead to healings? That I don't know. I do believe very strongly that prayer can be effective and can have results. I had extensive discussions with the chaplains, the full-time chaplains who were working at the hospital. Many of them had gone through the COVID pandemic and had their own faith, you know, challenged. And we talked about that because they would pray and the families would pray. And of course, so many in the COVID pandemic died. And in terms of this hospital, so many of them died. My own feeling is prayer is effective. Sometimes it can actually result in a healing. The divine presence comes through. But sometimes it has maybe an effect that we don't even know. And we have to let go a little bit and trust. And in the following way, Rick, I saw that there's cords of God's love that connect us to each other and to all of life. It's like a vast web connecting all of existence and all of life in the universe and on the planet. And these cords of love, you know, just shine with human love and God's love. And they're like musical chords, I like them to use a metaphor. And so that when you do an act of kindness, the chords vibrate and make a beautiful music that then reverberates out through the web, or an act of love or compassion. But I also think when you do a prayer, a heartfelt prayer for another, and you give your heart, those chords of divine love start vibrating and create a music. And the music, again, like a pebble in a pond, you know, the circles
yes.
expand out through the pond in ways that you don't even know. In the healings that may be happening throughout that web of life, of God's divine web. And so at some point, you just pray, you give it out to God, you don't focus necessarily on results. Yes, I prayed for results. I prayed that people would get healed. I prayed
yes.
that the doctors would be the fingers of God, if you will, and lead them to healing. But at some point, I let go of that and just said, God, I put it in your hands. I see your light here. And just have your light and your love, God, you know, surround this person and their family.
We've got just a couple of minutes left. I want to ask you what you hope the takeaway is. People read Remembrance of Things Forgotten. What do you hope the takeaway is, besides being stories that enlighten us, the emotions that we'll go through along with you as you're telling the story? What's the takeaway for all of us in real life? What can we take away from what you went through that we could use in our lives to make us all better people?
Yeah, I think a lot of it is, I don't use this term in the book, but it's sort of a hierarchy of values. You know, so often our top value is, you know, I got to do X, I got to do Y,
yes.
I got to make more money, I got to advance my career, you know, all legitimate things. But what I learned was, that what's really important is the love and the kindness even that we have between each other. And that I realized when you are kind, when you pray for another, when you act with compassion without judgment or condemnation, and you look for the inherent worth and value of everyone around you, that when you do that, God is present. And if you don't believe in God, the presence of a divine or greater reality is there, an unbounded presence is there. And you don't have to be a mystic. You don't have to be Mother Teresa. You don't have to be a chaplain. But you can bring that presence of unbounded love, unbounded kindness into your everyday life. And when you do, a lot of the troubles and a lot of the upsets that you have take on a different perspective, and you realize, oh, there's another way to look at this, and there's something I can do no matter what struggles I'm going through. And what I can do is bring a little bit of kindness and light into the darkness, into my life and into other people's lives. And that's concrete, and that anybody can do wherever they are and with whatever they're going through.
You're an accomplished lawyer. I didn't go through all of the acknowledge all of the areas in your law career. You were chosen and recognized as one of the best lawyers in America for healthcare, being named a leading lawyer by Chambers USA, a very distinguished law career. At the end, when it's all over and you look back on your life, I have a feeling this time as a chaplain would be right up there with any legal accomplishment in the courtroom. Am I overstating that, or is that true?
No, you're not, Rick. I mean, I've had a very honorable, as I would call it, legal career.
Yes.
Where I've tried to be of service to others. But when I went to seminary, which was such joy, but then when I became a chaplain and saw, you know, what was happening, it transformed me. And it is the height. My sister actually said, and I quote her in my book, you know, she said, it's one thing to study how the car works, i.e. theologically or spiritually or through belief. She says it's another thing to get in the car and drive forward with faith and love. Because when you do that, suddenly it all becomes real. And
yes,
what really matters, and what maybe you've forgotten, you know, what really matters, you remember it, and now you start living it. So you're exactly right. I'm not going to put down my legal career, but being a chaplain, what I learned there shines brighter than anything else.
And we're all fortunate that you have shared all of that in the book, Remembrance of Things Forgotten. Stephen Chanani is our guest on the program. That's Chananie. The book is available wherever books are sold. Of course, I'll direct you to his website, and we have that on our website. You can link on directly, Stephen Chanani.ampbk.com. Book at Amazon, book at Barnes & Noble, the bookstore around the corner, wherever books are sold. And I'd like to thank King Pages Press. That's the marketing consultant that's worked with Stephen on the book, Results Oriented, making sure your work gets the attention it truly deserves. I thank them for this conversation. Stephen, it's been a pleasure having you on the program. I love what you're doing. I feel the love that you had for those people in the room. Yeah, a very powerful book, a powerful interview. Thank you for being with us on the program.
Thank you so much, Rick. I really appreciate the time you've taken.
It has been our pleasure. Remembrance of Things Forgotten. That's the name of the book. Link on our website, thisweekinamerica.us. And we're back on today's program. This Week in America continues right after these messages.
You're listening to This Week in America with Rick Bratton. More after this.